Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Back here on Cody and Gold alongside Cody Tapp, I'm Alex Gold, Nick Schwert producing the show. We're headed out to Arrowhead coming up at 11:45. You'll hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes right here on your official broadcast partner for the Kansas City Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio. Of course, we're also just about 20 minutes away from the trash of the day. Excited for that one today. But we want to dive a little bit deeper into what are the numbers saying a little bit about this Chiefs offense, this Chiefs team as a whole. And to do that, we welcome in Steve Palazzolo over at Pro Football Focus. And Steve, thanks for coming on. Despite the turnovers, how close is this Chiefs offense to what they were doing back in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that much different. I think efficiency-wise, they're fine. Patrick Mahomes having the 8 interceptions, it's funny because I think last year at this time he only had 1 interception and he had, by our numbers, far more turnover-worthy plays. I think the interception luck that Mahomes had last year, which wasn't egregious, but he had some luck, it's just gone the other way this year. And they also, the interceptions seem to come at inopportune times, right? In the tight red zone when Tyreek Hill drops the ball, or Mahomes on a late second half drive going in, or the fourth quarter against the Ravens with a fumble, or all the turnovers seem to come at inopportune times. The one other thing I think is different, I don't think Mahomes has played his best football. I don't think he's played anything close to his best football. He's by our numbers, more of a mid-tier quarterback this year, and that's not because, he's just missing more throws than he has previously and not making as many special throws as he has previously. But I think the offense as a whole, they still have the second most yards after the catch, and they've been really good and efficient if you take out the turnovers. So the offense as a whole is good, and I think the encouraging sign, I would say, is that Mahomes hasn't played his best football yet, and they're still moving the ball, and I think he'll get better and get back to his previous levels as the season goes on.
Like, I know based on a points per drive perspective, they are the most efficient team in football by a pretty wide margin here in the early going. If he gets turned into, hey, be hyper-efficient guy, because we know that they're not moving the ball down the field, Steve. Those special throws essentially just are being taken away by defenses who have decided never to ever blitz again against Patrick Mahomes, who were some, is it hard to be in that top 5 to 7, at least in your rankings category, if he's just not going to be given the opportunity to make those throws?
Maybe to a point, but I think, you can still hit cover 2 shots, and you can,
sure,
you can pick your spots. I think I got to find out, I got to look quickly where his negatively graded plays are. To be, when I always described Mahomes in previous years, I said, look, as much as you could put the highlight reel on and it's as good as anybody you've ever seen, I don't think that's what made Mahomes special. I think what made him special was not missing a ton of throws as well, right? The special stuff's special. That's great. But he didn't miss a ton of throws in his early years. He's a tick up as far as just being off, or overthrows, underthrows, general misses, a tick off from where he's been in his previous few seasons. I think that's a part of it as well. And it's not like the Chiefs have not played patient games before. They've had a ton of games where it's like, oh yeah, I'll take the quick out. Yeah, I'll take the underneath stuff. But that's one of the things that I think is a little bit different is even when they play that patient game, he's just missing a few more throws or, you know, a turnover-worthy play here or there that is coming back to bite. Or, you know, again, that end of half game, that end of half play where it's a fumble and then he compounds it. I mean, that adds up and ends up becoming, you know, a pretty rough play for him.
Generally speaking, I think the industry motto is that turnovers are mostly unpredictable. That's what Vegas would tell you about the way you bet games too. The Chiefs are on pace for 37 of them, Steve. Is that coming down? I mean, in your mind, just based on, because it's hard to know when that will slow down at this point for Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, it has to slow down at some point, right? But, I mean, if we said that 2 weeks ago, you'd say, okay, it hasn't happened yet. All right, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
It will. It will come down. And the bottom line is, you know, Mahomes overall does a good job of taking care of the ball, right? I mean, even I described some interception luck last year. There was a point in the season where he had 25 touchdowns and one interception. That just wasn't real last year. That just wasn't the reality of the way he was playing. But overall, for his playing style, he takes good care of the ball. He doesn't take negative plays as far as sacks go. I mean, it's all really good. So I think that'll all balance out. Plus, I think you look at just they've played a rough schedule, and they've played teams that have forced the Chiefs to play really good games, whether it was the Browns in week one, the Ravens, the Chargers, teams that were aggressive against them, made the margin of error for the Chiefs offense just a little bit tighter. And they already start with a higher margin of error than others because of how special Mahomes, Tyreek, and Kelce are, but it just made their margin of error tighter. So when you do have one or two turnovers here and there, it's not the same as it's been previous years because they had other teams keeping up with them offensively.
We're talking to Steve Palazzolo over at Pro Football Focus. On the other side of the ball, this defense has been dreadful. We know that there was maybe some promise after that performance against Washington, but what do the numbers say about this defense right now with non-existent pass rush to this point?
Yeah, it's not great. Overall ranking for us is, you know, near the bottom, and in pretty much in every facet. You know, they're second worst in just overall grade for us. They're worst in just straight run defense grade. Coverage grade is a little bit closer to the middle of the pack, and I think that would be probably the most encouraging sign is with our lowest pass rush grade, they are middle of the pack as far as coverage goes. I think you know, Chris Jones playing on the edge is one of those things that, you know, if they put him back on the interior, could certainly help. I understand why they did it, but you're not getting moving Chris Jones to the edge and letting your supposed strength, the other, you know, big interior defensive lineman, letting them play more snaps. I think that's what's come back to bite just a little bit. You know, Jaron Reed's one of those guys where he's always put up pressures because he's had a lot of volume, he's had a lot of attempts, but his efficiency is not great as far as rushing the passer goes. Frank Clark, when he's been on the field, has never, by our numbers, even when he's picking up a sack after 8 seconds on Ryan Tannehill to go to the Super Bowl, like, he still hasn't made big plays. He hasn't won one-on-ones at a level that, you know, matches his contract. So he's underwhelmed from a pass rushing standpoint. So a lot of those things have added up. But I do think, personnel-wise, Chris Jones on the interior, more Juan Thornhill, there are potential answers. And also this defense, similar personnel as last year, and they played better last year. So I think they can get better. They have the options, but they definitely have to do better up front, both run defense-wise and rushing the passer.
A name that's out there right now, and now he's a free agent down in Houston, from Houston, is Whitney Mercilus. His name has been linked to Kansas City a little bit here. At this point in his career, like, how much added value do you think he could add to a Chiefs defense?
They're always worth maybe kicking the tires on just to see. He hasn't rushed the passer well since about 2018, though. I mean, that's 2019, he had a ton of pressures when they made the playoffs, but he also had, I think, probably the most pass rushes, over 660 pass rushes, which is a crazy number. So if you just look at, you know, again, snap-for-snap efficiency, it's not really there. So he hasn't been really good since 2016, and he hasn't been good rushing the passer since about 2018, early 2019. So there's some risk there. You say, okay, maybe in a part-time role, can he do something? But I don't think he's this. He's not necessarily a savior. You know, there's a reason why the Texans cut him.
Yeah, from one of the worst teams in football, too, Steve. It starts to feel like, right, Maybe that guy is available for a reason. In that case, when you some of the analytics community, I think the adage has been like, oh, they don't care about running backs. We're getting ready to face in Kansas City maybe one of the top five running backs of all time in Derrick Henry. I know that there's only so much added value typically a running back is looked at. But from a Titans perspective, I mean, it's got to play a bigger factor than any running game in the NFL, what Derrick Henry does.
Yeah, he does. I mean, part of the analytics community, I think, also does a poor job of explaining things sometimes. They, you know, when they say running backs don't matter, right? And it's like, well, you know, sometimes you find a guy that does have an impact, and Derrick Henry is that guy. I think what the community means is don't try to find and chase a Derrick Henry because you just don't know, right? There's a lot of running backs who look special, and, yeah, you know, they're still a product of what's around them. I think with Derrick Henry, he just continues to prove that notion wrong. I mean, they do have a good run-blocking unit. That is the one thing about the Titans. They've had a top five run-blocking unit each of the last 2 years. Their pass-blocking unit's bottom three, bottom four, but they do run-block really well up front. They give him a little bit of room, but you give him a head of steam, he's tough to tackle. He's got more yards after contact than almost every team in the NFL has just rushing yards. So Henry, his ability, his durability, his ability to create after contact, and he does have that, you know, the thing that football people like to say is, oh, you know, you wear down a team and in the fourth quarter, guy takes over. Again, you just don't see that around the NFL, except maybe with Derrick Henry.
In December,
you know,
too,
carry
Steve.
20 to 25. There are defenders who are like, man, this dude's still coming at me. He's 250 pounds and he's running 4-5. I want to tackle that. Like, you do actually see that. It's kind of like Tyreek Hill makes NFL players look like high school players speed-wise sometimes. But he's like the only one in the NFL who does that. Derrick Henry is probably the only guy in the NFL who actually makes defensive players say, think twice. I don't know if I want to tackle that guy. So, yeah, Henry's special. Their offense runs through him. Tannehill's efficiency over the last couple of years, though, has also made Henry better, and they've worked off each other really well. But, you know, Henry's one of the running backs that does matter around the NFL.
Steve, we joked about it yesterday, and you're a pretty big guy, so I'll ask you, what's the price tag for you to stand in front of Derrick Henry in pads? He's not going to try to avoid you. He's going to try to run you over.
No. Oh, no, thank you. I'm too old for that stuff. Chris Collinsworth owns PFF. His son Jack did a spot for ESPN a couple years ago. He took a Derrick Henry stiff arm. And I feel like I appreciate Jack Collinsworth doing the research for everyone else in the media. You don't want to do that. Jack did it for you.
Yeah, no question. Steve Palazzolo of Pro Football Focus. Thanks for the insight as always. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. Good stuff there from Steve Palazzolo. He says this offense, he's like, yeah, they're not even the turnovers, they're not far off at all.
And yet he's still saying Mahomes isn't playing his best football, which means they can be. How good they've been offensively absent the turnovers, and to think that he could play better. He's not even talking about the turnovers. He's just talking about like missed throws, missed opportunities.
I almost cut him off though at one point. He said the numbers are showing that Mahomes has just been
But he didn't say he thought that.
No, he said the numbers showing Mahomes just been a mid-tier quarterback. And
look, but we talked a little bit about the MVP race. There are seven guys with better stats than him right now.
I know the numbers. I will say this, and we reference Pro Football Focus a lot. It's just, and look, you can view this as a positive. Like, oh, if the numbers are really saying he's a mid-tier quarterback, then look out, because he often still is averaging more points per drive than
the NFL.
But like, I'm sorry, they're like numbers are like, how are numbers saying he's been a mid-tier quarterback this year? Like, that's just crazy to me, man. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Like, go back and watch the second
quarterback.
Watch the second half against what? There were seven throws in the second half alone against Washington that nobody else in the NFL is making. Like the one that didn't even count.
Oh God, that play was incredible.
That to me, that's in the discussion for like amongst the best throws he's ever made. And it didn't even count.
Seth Kaiser and I have had a very long running joke for like 3 years. We've been personally tracking between the two of us Patrick Mahomes' greatest throws that never counted, whether it be a penalty or a guy dropped the ball. Like, there's one to DeMarcus Robinson a couple of years ago. It's between, like, nine defenders, and he's falling down, and he threads a needle and hits DeMarcus Robinson right between the hands, and he drops, and you're like, oh, come on, DeMarcus. That was one of the single greatest plays I've ever seen. You know what also counts on that list? The Super Bowl play with the ball that hits him between the face. And you're like, well, that's probably just falling down like Superman.
You're saying
one of the greatest throws I've ever seen.
Numbers indicate he's a middle-tier quarterback. All you're saying is he's thrown a lot of interceptions. That's it.
Yes.
That's all you're saying.
Correct.
Because you look at his numbers compared to his own standards, which are pretty lofty, highest completion percentage of his career, on pace to
be near his top
51
yardage,
touchdowns, which would be a career high for him. Middle tier, though, We doing that?
That also says a little bit about.
Do that?
No, but it says a lot about what the early competition at quarterback has been. Because Kyler Murray's got some gaudy stats. Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Tom Brady.
Yeah, it's just middle tiers, like suggesting that there's 14 other quarterbacks that have been better. And it's just like, we all know that's not.
And I don't think he believes that. We could have pushed him and like, do you think he's the 14th best quarterback? I don't think Steve's going to be like, no, I do not
think
that.
He's just saying, you know, how the offense, the reason why, in fact, one of his colleagues, Eric Eager, over at Pro Bowl Focus, said that the offense is ready to explode or could explode. I guess that's part of the thinking, right? That if the numbers in some areas are saying he's been like a mid-tier quarterback, well, that's not going to, even if the numbers are saying like, we know that, well, that's not going to continue. And Nick's right. I mean, so much of it is the fact he's got 8 picks, and that's what's hurting some of the numbers. But then there's also plenty of numbers for Patrick Mahomes, whether it's the touchdowns or the yardage, that are still out of this world.
He's a silly, silly, silly good quarterback. Just like you watch it and you're like you pointed out, it's the spectacular plays always stand out, but he has been incredibly efficient in all of the other stuff, too. He doesn't screw up the little things, typically. I think that's why over the last couple of weeks, people are like, he's throwing the ball on the ground a little bit more. And I assume that that's some of what he's speaking to, where he's still slightly off, or when I talked about with the offensive line yesterday about being slightly off. As screwed up as it is, I actually do think this offense can be better. It doesn't seem like it should be capable of being better, because they're the highest point per game or point per drive offense in the last 15 years in the NFL, but I actually think they're capable of being even better than they are now. One thing I wonder about is, part of the reason I don't think they're playing the same way is, ever since the Super Bowl and what I think maybe, Nick, you put it as, they bled, teams saw them bleed, I don't feel like, I feel like they've been hurt by not playing with that level of invincibility anymore. I think they had 2 straight years where they felt invincible. And obviously this year, it's impossible to feel that way. After the Super Bowl last year, you certainly didn't feel that way. And I think not feeling that way makes them feel that way. To the point that they do break off 4 games in a row, at any point 5 games in a row, and that starts to swell back up in them, we might see the kind of run we're used to Kansas City going on. Because that's all it takes. Winning these next 2 games, beating the Packers, and then what? Then you got to stand on the other side and watch them play that way? Because now they got the confidence and the play to go with it.
Yeah, and this is also why that the Chiefs are still never out of this thing in the grand scheme of it. Because while, yes, I agree that they, whether you want to say they're, you know, they, I think it was Kyle Brandt referenced, you know, Rocky a little bit. And it's like, and you've got, you've been in a boxing fight, and you've been fighting, you've been cut and all that. That's all good and all. And yeah, there's some realization of the vulnerability of your team all of a sudden. And that's a shock to the system, perhaps.
Yeah, the Super Bowl just felt like it changed their confidence in a way.
But I don't think it takes much to get that back. I just don't see that being much of an issue for them to get back if they can, again, it keeps going back to turnovers and everything, but if they can get that corrected.
That's easily the biggest problem of their entire season. And I'm saying that considering they've had the worst defense to this point.
To me, it's just like, look what happened to Buffalo on Monday night, 2 nights ago. Like, that was the first time this year, really. I mean, the Steelers was one that you can write off week one, but that was really the first time since people started talking about them that they had a team that was willing, you know, able to move the ball on that defense willingly. No issue. No resistance. The Titans were able to do that.
They didn't run into too many problems. They were in an easy division. They played a moderately competitive AFC title game against Kansas City, or they can tell themselves that, right? They can say, hey, we were in that game, a couple of things this way or that way, and we're there. They go out, and they've got a bye week this week, so they're going to have a chance to have a breather. Because if they went back out and lost 2 in a row, then you got a big problem. Coming off a bye against the Dolphins, I don't think they're going to drop that game.
Trash of the Day.
Trash of the Day is brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Just point, and it is gone. This is an actual lawsuit in New York right now. There's a woman there that's suing Kellogg's, saying that it's strawberry Pop-Tarts have more apple and pear in them than strawberry, and it's disclosed, in fact, on the back of the packaging, it even shows that. She's seeking more than $5 million. I'm also Team Brown Sugar on the Pop-Tarts, by the way. Just want to throw that out there.
That's your favorite Pop-Tart?
Yeah, the cinnamon.
That's no one's S'mores. Favorite. That's no one's favorite
S'mores.
Pop-Tart.
Yeah. When's the last time you had a Pop-Tart? I haven't had one probably
Cody had
in
one
10
last,
years.
Cody had one last week. I saw him.
Really did. Now, do you put it in the microwave? Or
and
you
he
just
took the last brown sugar cinnamon. I saw that. They haven't
replenished. But it's not my favorite.
Snack bar, yeah.
Haven't had a Pop-Tart in years and years and years. We do have them in the building. Are you putting them in the microwave, or are you just taking a bite?
Just take it.
Okay.
Did you ever, you know what, First, this lady's correct for suing them. I hope
she's correct.
Yep, I hope she wins her case.
$5 million.
They're not strawberries. They're falsely advertising herself.
I actually think that if you eat Pop Tarts, you're not allowed to sue anybody for anything ever. No, that's just like a general rule of thumb.
If you've ever eaten a Pop Tart,
no. If you are regularly consuming Pop Tarts, you're not allowed to sue people.
Yeah, because you're saying you don't care what you're putting in your body anyway. So what are you doing?
Well, it's just a general philosophy.
It's just blanketly.
You're
applies.
Eating Pop Tarts, so like this just like I guess, they're not compatible ideas.
Were either of you guys rich enough to get toaster strudels? That was definitively something I associated with rich kids growing up.
They're not, dude. They're not expensive. They're like $2.
In my brain, that's what rich kids got. They got the fancier Pop Tart.
The brown sugar cinnamon.
They got the
is...
better version.
Toaster
strudels
are incredible. Incredible.
I to this day have never had a toaster.
I don't think I've ever had a toaster strudel either.
I'm bringing in toaster strudels next Monday if the Chiefs win.
If the Chiefs win,
toaster strudels.
Because Cody's not going to be here tomorrow.
That's true.
Yeah, he's trying to help me out.
That's true. No, brown sugar cinnamon, man. That was the go-to as a kid. Absolutely. Brown sugar cinnamon was fantastic.
It's not false advertising?
Wait,
you guys have never
had toaster strudels?
I swear to God, I associated that with that's what like rich kids were able to get.
Toaster strudels.
I didn't get name brand Pop-Tarts either.
So good. They're
like going
flaky.
To school in the morning, what was your go-to breakfast snack when you woke up like, back in the day? Like for me, it was either Cheerios or I was a big mini muffin, like the chocolate chip mini muffin packages. I ate hundreds of packages
of
those.
Toaster strudels were my go-to.
There's a million kids in my house. We didn't get an individually packaged mini muffins. We ate. You remember the commercial where the guy crouches all the way down and he's shopping for the cereal that comes in like the 30-pound bag? That's what we ate. That was breakfast. Whatever massive bag of cereal existed.
Mini muffins. I had so many mini muffins in my life. Those were legit.
My kid's a big fan of the mini muffins.
Appalled.
I've never had a toaster strudel.
You guys are going to...
What kind of flavors do we have to choose from here?
I usually just go with strawberry.
Oh, okay.
What other flavors do they have?
I don't know.
We got the
raspberry.
I like that he's.
I'm good on the raspberry. I'm good.
Blueberry.
What do you got against strawberry?
I'm fine with strawberry. He said raspberry, so I'm good on the raspberry.
It's just like, man, you put those things in the toaster, then you get the icing packet, and you drizzle the icing across the top of the strudel, and you eat. Man, it's flaky, but then it's gooey on the inside with the. This delectable. It's all super healthy too. It's good for you.
Sounds good.
It's
good for you. I'm not saying they're expensive, but I always assumed they were much more expensive than Pop-Tarts growing up.
It's just the word strudel.
That makes it
versus
sound fancy.
Tart.
Yeah, it makes it sound much fancier. I don't know which one's more expensive. I assume the toaster strudel.
Text line is kind of right. If it tastes like strawberry, who cares where the taste comes from?
You're eating a Pop-Tart.
Does the strawberry Pop-Tart taste like strawberry or not? If the answer is yes, then what's the problem? Whether it has some pears in there or not.
What did you think it had? But also, just...
Text line says Nick needs to bring in cherry toaster strudels.
Oh, cool.
Oh, okay.
And they also have a cinnamon roll one. Oh, man. Hey, go ahead and get it with the brown sugar one, please. Thank you, Nick. We'll enjoy those on Monday after the Chiefs beat the Titans, right? That's the deal. Coming up next in the Chiefs Red Half Hour, the Chief, Cody says, needs to become a part-time player.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
Chiefs Red Half Hour is brought to you by E. Edwards Workwear, proud partner of Carhartt Clothing. Reminder, coming up in about 15 minutes, we're headed out to Arrowhead. You're going to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes live right here on 610 Sports Radio. Find out where things are at on the injury front from Andy Reid. Of course, we saw a couple guys get injured in that win against Washington over the weekend. Anthony Hitchens, there was a report at one point a hyperextended elbow. Hopefully it's that, nothing more serious. And then, of course, I wonder what the practice routine could be like for Chris Jones this week, for Travis Kelce, for Tyreek Hill, for Charvarius Ward. So there's still a lot of guys banged up.
We're one more game of missed Chris Jones for you to be on my side of things when I told you 2 weeks ago he wasn't going to play for a while. I was maybe a little more forceful and, I don't know, contradictory to what the Chiefs sometimes say in injury front. But I also don't know what's going on with the injury. I just think sometimes they tend to be careful.
I don't think it's like, and I know you were obviously exaggerating a little bit, but I'm not worried about it becoming the Eric Berry situation, which is what you threw out at one point. I'm like, he's going to play within the next month, if that's what you're asking.
No, but they have a history of like claiming he's close and really he's a month to 6 weeks away. That happens a lot. Eric Berry, as we know, never got back on the field.
The only switch, and we'll hear from Andy again, he's going to speak here shortly, but I think it was Fesco yesterday. He was reporting that the Chiefs are optimistic that he'll play this week, which is different than, oh, he's getting close. Now we'll see. Does Andy Reid?
Sound very similar to me. Optimistic and very close.
Andy Reid use the word optimistic today, or is it we'll see? If we get a little we'll see, then I will lean your way a little bit more if it's like, well, we'll see. We'll see.
He's not going to practice today, but we'll see.
Yeah. So Andy's going to speak here in just a little bit. There's one player that you would like to see become more of a part-time player.
Especially when Chris Jones comes back. The reason to bring up Chris Jones is because this is not plausible until he is back on the field, which is why I want him back on the field. The Chiefs, to their credit, last week, finally stopped playing favoritism with guys I think they like and instead started to go down a road of, let's see if we can be better just based on somebody else being in there. They made the switch to Juan Thornhill. They gave Rashad Fenton more time, even though Mike Hughes was a guy they signed in the offseason and is a former first-round pick, and Fenton's just, what, a sixth-round pick inside of their own organization. And I get why you give more opportunity to those guys. It does not matter that Frank Clark makes $26 million anymore. You need to reduce his playing time. He cannot be effective for you and stay on the field for you and play 80% of the snaps. It is not a good strategy. This is also the reason that I would be interested in bringing in Whitney Mercilus, is that I think the combination of adding one more defensive lineman and having Chris Jones back actually gives you the ability to keep these guys fresh. They, for the longest part of this season, have carried more offensive linemen than pretty much any other spot on their entire roster. It's time to cut some of that loose and start going with a larger defensive line base that you can keep fresher, because Frank Clark should not play the amount he plays anymore. Not unless he's going to start being significantly more effective.
Yeah, it absolutely requires Chris Jones being healthy to even talk it about does. That. Whitney Mercilus would be a rotational player if the Chiefs end up signing him. He's officially a free agent now as of 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Anybody can sign him. He's a vested veteran. That's negotiations. If they want, they can already be going on. We'll see in the next 24, 48 hours if, in fact, he signs with anybody, if he signs with Kansas City. Because with what we've seen from Mike Dana,
I don't believe we're at the point yet where if Chris Jones was playing Sunday, where they would say, all right, we're going to move Mike Dana full time on the outside and have Frank Clark rotate with, you know, Turk Wharton, for example. But if you told me that Whitney Mercilus could rotate with Mike Dana and Frank Clark, and it's and then Chris Jones goes inside, I could see that. I just don't know if a combination of Okafor, Dana, and Turk
is
Wharton
enough to reduce Frank Clark playing
correct
time.
Because you're right that we at some point doesn't matter what the guy's making if he's producing.
How
or
can
is he
I
producing
get the best pass rush?
But I don't think they're there yet. A because of the personnel that they still have to work with. But we are getting very close, especially if they go out and bring in Mercilus, to where you're going to have to start seeing and going ahead and moving Chris Jones back inside more than we've seen, at least on a, I mean, at the very least, it's got to be on a third, you know, a third down situation type of opportunity.
They just, it, and I think we've probably pointed out on the show, unfortunately, is that this is what's hindering them on defense. They got a $26 million player who essentially doesn't matter. Now I'm telling you to count on him even less. But I don't think I am. By reducing his playing time, I think there's a better likelihood he stays on the field and is more effective.
I just need him on rundowns. I know it's not what you're paying. That's not what you paid him for, but that's actually where he's been the most effective right now.
Correct.
So maybe that's part of the rotation. On obvious passing downs, it's weird as
backwards.
He
might be out, and it might be Dan and Chris Jones in there.
I know that seems like ass backwards, considering who you paid him to be. But if he's not effective in passing downs, but he's better at, you know, sealing the edge on in rundowns, and this week you're playing Derrick Henry. I know Derrick Henry's more north-south, but still, you're going to see them bounce outside with Derrick Henry plenty at times. This game might not be the game where you want to cut down on Frank Clark, is what I'm saying, based off of the type of offense you're facing. This might not be the week.
I can't do anything about it until, or I don't want them
Chris
to do
Jones
anything about it until Chris Jones is
But let's
back.
Say Chris Jones is playing. Is this the week where you want to cut back on Frank Clark, considering he actually has been better in run situations?
It depends largely on whether or not they, I mean,
because for me,
the game
this is
flow
not the week.
Probably, but yeah. No, I get your point. But that's what's crazy is that I don't care what the Chiefs determine he does best is. Because we talked about it like that with Derek Nnadi for a while, right? He wasn't a big pass rushing guy. He was great against the run. They were using him in these run snaps. If that's where Frank Clark is good, that's where you should use him.
Did you hear, you mean Steve
There's
Palazzolo.
No more babysitting players just because you pay him $26 million. He's not going to be a Chief after this year. This is not a long play.
Sure.
Where over the long term, you need him to be a good pass rusher. I'm not sure their pass rusher is ever getting any better.
When we talked with Steve Palazzolo just a short while ago, he mentioned, you know, we were talking about Jaren Reed, and he said the one thing about Jaren Reed, he's never been a highly effective pressure guy in terms of percentage. Right, he's based on the snaps. Like for it's more he needed volume to get there. Well, we haven't seen that like from
and that's what Mercilus has been getting in the early part of the season. That's how he's managed to get three sacks.
And so Jaren Reed at this point, I mean the pressures from Jaren Reed just aren't never going to come this year. Now, can he help you in run situations more so this week? You need it badly, but I don't think this is why you need to move Chris Jones back inside. If you have the answer on the outside with a combination of guys, because you're just not getting anything.
But the way teams
Reed.
Are running on them, like as successfully as they are running on them, there is still a place for Jaren Reed if he's going to be good against the run. It's all the early down stuff. Jaren Reed's got to come off the field when it comes to a pass rush situation, so Chris Jones can go, because this is, I thought, the original plan. In the early preseason games and in the first game of the season, Chris Jones outside first and second down, Chris Jones inside third down.
Now, but you know what happened? Frank Clark was unavailable. So they were not going to be like, man, we're going to roll Mike Dana, who hadn't done anything yet at that time.
And Turk Wharton
and
on
so
the
that
outside.
Wasn't an option. That was the big, that's why I think the rotation, the original plan
But
stopped.
Now, Dana and Frank Clark with Chris Jones on the outside, and Frank Clark's fresh. Because he's not, let's just say for a bit, he's taking a few less snaps in the early part because they're going to run Jaren Reed out there in those early snaps instead to keep Frank Clark healthy for the, let's even call him the third and threes, where it could be a run or it could be a pass, and you want a healthy, fresh version. Their only opportunity to do this now is to at least throw numbers at the problem. Like, we don't know that that's going to solve it, but we know individual effort or asking for better individual performance is no longer the solution to this. The solution is, can you just get, you know, like, can you throw enough fresh bodies at the problem that eventually they get through and get those 6 second sacks when the coverage holds up? Which, for the most part, this year has. Like, that's really the question you're asking. I mean, to the point, I don't know. I mean, is Jaren Reed going to get a sack this year? He's going to finish the season with a sack? We're a third of the way through the season. He doesn't have one. He's played in all six games. This is not an injury related issue.
You don't
issue.
Think he will? You don't think he gets a sack this year?
I sense a wheel spin.
I was asking a question. Since,
yeah, but a lot of questions end up having punishments
in
it.
And a lot of questions come from a place of opinion, which you're never short
this
on.
Feels
you sounded confident that you don't believe
this. This
is
exactly
one.
The way the Patrick Mahomes interception one does. And he gets a sack this week, yeah, and I immediately hopefully. Go back to spinning. So, no, I won't do it.
No,
not
okay.
This maybe, but not yet.
Okay, all right. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Andy Reid, perhaps about what they can do defensively, along with Patrick Mahomes here on 610 Sports Radio.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Back here on Cody and Gold, we're headed out to Arrowhead to hear from Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid here momentarily right here on your official broadcast partner for the Chiefs 610 Sports Radio. I almost choked myself, Nick, with my headphones accidentally. They are currently caught in the wheel of the chair. Just flat out caught. Like that's why I'm hunched over, because I can't sit up straight because it'll just cut the headphone off. It's like it's stuck in the wheel. This is a first. We'll see if we can't get that corrected.
Be a professional.
That's right. We're gonna go through this. We're not gonna have any issues. It's gonna tough this one out. This is the adversity that sometimes you face when it comes to sports talk radio. Very, very serious.
That's why you're
stuff.
The best, man.
Yeah, clearly. Before we hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, the trade deadline's coming up on November the 2nd, and there is a wheel spin involved with you and I think, or at least just you in general. I don't know if there's an opposite side, where if the Texans don't trade Deshaun Watson, then you have to spin the wheel. Do you actually want the Chiefs to make a trade in general for the trade deadline, though? Because I think the answer is yes, you should want them to, but I don't see financially how they're able to pull this thing off at some point, even if the right player is available. And we'll see if they're just going to sign Whitney Mercilus. That's the great thing. He's not going to cost you anything. He's not going to cost you any draft capital either. But the team cap space right now for the Chiefs, according to Over the Cap, is just $2.8 million. So like, even if you go back to Stephon Gilmore, who ended up getting traded from the Patriots to the Panthers, they were able to eat so much of that contract. It's also why the actual draft pick they gave up wasn't all that much. So yes, my answer is, yeah, I want the Chiefs to make a trade before the deadline to improve the roster, but it's not as cut and dry as just like, yeah, gotta go make a trade, gotta go find someone. Who's available? And Jeremy Fowler's reported that the Chiefs have had some interest in multiple guys. Like, save me Marlon Mack, right? I'm good. That was like last week or so his name came up. I'm good there. But financially, is there someone that can help you defensively is really the question. And you only have X amount of money in cap space. And if you're not able to take on cap space, guess what? The team that you're trading with, they might require more draft capital. And I don't believe the Chiefs, knowing what long-term issues they have financially, certainly on the defensive side of the ball, even next year, no matter what happens with Frank Clark and Anthony Hitchens, I'm not giving up draft capital. If you want to trade somebody for a 6th-round pick, a 7th-round pick, and it's a defensive player, I can probably be talked into that. But those other teams aren't all that excited about a 5th, a 6th, or a 7th-round pick. And I know we had a conversation with Nate Taylor yesterday about this. And it's kind of like, all right, a 5th-round pick, probably the limit of what you're willing to give up in a scenario at the trade deadline. Even if said player even exists. And that's the challenge for those that will mention the Chiefs needing to be aggressive at the trade deadline. Like, got a couple weeks till you get there. There'll be some more names that leak out. But look at contracts. Like, even Whitney Mercilus, who's now a free agent, he wasn't available to be traded because of his contract. But let's go out to Arrowhead right now and hear from Andy Reid.
Hitch has a tricep contusion. Oh, he won't practice today. Again, just calming that down. And then Joe Tooney will rest him today. So with the hand. Look forward to the challenge of playing the Titans. We haven't played them in a couple years here, but they sure are a good football team. And yeah, everybody got a chance to see that Monday night. I mean, they thought they did a real nice job there. So we'll start our preparation today. With the first day of practice and get ourselves ready to go down to Tennessee. Anyways, put that time yours.
Coach, what do you want to see out of Chris Jones and Chavarius Ward since they are going to practice today? Yeah. What are you hoping to see out of them before you?
Yeah, well, just kind of get back in the swing, knock the rust off, get back in the swing of things. they've been working hard. Just they haven't been practicing. So, but conditioning won't be necessarily the issue. It'll be just getting back out there and doing the football stuff.
Andy, last time you went to Tennessee, there was, you know, the end of the game, it seemed like there was a jillion ways you could have won that game, but it was the last game you lost in 2019. Was there something, whether it was in the facilities or the week after, that you could sense that was kind of a gut check for you guys, that you guys were going to respond the way you did?
Yeah, you know, I didn't handle that right. You know, all said and done, that last call wasn't a very good one. It didn't work. And called a screen and, you know, we've been running the ball pretty good, so I probably should have just stuck with the run. But that's hindsight. So, but I do remember it very well. As far as things going on, I mean, our guys, you know, they bared down. I mean, we all had a piece of it. It was special teams, had the block, and we defense gave up some yardage there right at the end, and we all had a part of it. So, and the guys, you know, we started playing better after that. I mean, which is kind of your point. So,
following up on your time in Nashville in 2019, Derrick Henry rushed for 188 yards, 2 touchdowns. Everyone saw what he did Monday night. What type of formidable challenge does facing that particular running back face?
Yeah, he's a great kid. He's a good football player. To think that he's carrying the ball as much as he is, and year after year he's putting up these numbers, it's crazy. So. And he's a great player. So are you going to hold him to no? No, that's not what's going to happen. But he's going to get his yards, and then you just have to limit it the best you can. You got to tackle him. He's a big man, but you got to tackle him. And our guys know that, you know. So they've got a good offense. They base it around 22. So they got a great play action game, and that comes off of action to him. And so, you know, we got to be ready for all that.
Every season's about kind of ebb and flow, and but you used the term the other day about maybe there was a enough's enough mentality at halftime. How do you see that possibly holding, or how do you get momentum from that?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, that's it. I mean, you got to go do it. You know, you can't talk about it anymore. It's you got to go do. And so guys will come out today. They'll work hard. That's where it starts. Practice fast and accurate, and try to maximize that the best you can in preparation. And then you let the chips fall where they may when you go play, right? But you got to prepare yourself.
And you saw that in the results in the second half. Did you see it, you know, in some way taking form before you went back out at halftime, after halftime?
Yeah, I could sense it at halftime that they were kind of tired of what was going on. So, yeah, but, yeah.
I know you'll see on Anthony Hitchens, but with him out of the mix, fair to say that Ben Neiman will get those reps making the calls, or will the younger guys maybe mix in there too?
Yeah, all three of them will be in there going, so at different spots. Spag's got a lot of different personnel groups in there, but yeah, all three of them can make the calls they need.
Yeah, Andy, who did have the call responsibilities when Anthony went out in Sunday's game?
They kind of mix that up. You know, they mix it up. You know, that's the best I can say.
And you mentioned Tennessee's ability to run stuff off of play action. Just for any linebacker, how do you try to teach being aggressive, because you know how talented Henry is, but also obviously being aware of, you know, passes that may come behind those windows?
Yeah, you gotta study the tape and see if you can't come up with some kind of indicator. They do a great job with that. But you gotta be able to pure read it and then get yourself back in a position where they're not attacking the middle of the field because you're not there. So you're stuck in the line of scrimmage. So you got to be disciplined with that. And then you got to study.
And you mentioned Joey Forston having surgery earlier today. What do you tell a guy like that that's worked so hard to make this team and now, you know, has a long road of mentally and physically recovery coming?
Yeah, listen, I mean, things happen in this business. He'll be back. He's built a nice foundation for himself. So he got a taste of it, and it's just a matter of him getting in, rehabbing, and getting himself back. But he knows that he can play now. Not that he didn't know that before, but he's done it. So, you know, that's kind of where he's at. And there's no easy way around it. He's going to miss it, but he's going to be plenty busy rehabbing that thing.
A couple more. We'll go start with you, Matt.
Hey, Coach, I know it's still early in the season, relatively speaking, and there is always the every game's important mentality, but you know, Buffalo, the Chargers, Ravens, Titans, all shape it up to be the top teams in the AFC. With losses to those other three, does this game have a bigger magnitude for you guys?
Yeah, they all do. I mean, you know, every game, you know, you got to treat it like its own, like it's the game, right? I mean, you don't want to, that's just how it is in today's football. So you lose a few games and you're playing catch up. I mean, you just named off, what, four teams, and, you know, you're playing catch up when you lose a few games. So every game becomes important. Every game should be important, though, to start with. I mean, it's hard for me to stand up and say, well, this one's not so important. You know?
Coach, we get to talk with Turk a little bit later today. Just the kind of player he is, he, you know, coming from a smaller school, he's worked his butt off, really, to be here.
Yeah.
How have you seen him progress as a player and then be able to make plays like he did last Sunday?
Yeah, that was a great play. So he works extremely hard. In practice, he goes 100 miles an hour. He's gifted athletically. He was a running back in high school, so he can move around a little bit. But he works at his trade. That's what he does. And he does it 100 miles an hour. Every play, every day, he's going. You don't have to worry about that with him.
Last one, Sam. Just wanted to ask you about Willie Gay. Obviously, he missed a month, but just 18 snaps on Sunday. Is it just a process of working him back to full health?
Yeah, he's getting back in the swing of things. And did a good job. He'll keep getting more as we go.
All
right. Thank you. Okay, good. Thanks.
All right. That is Chiefs head coach Andy Reid speaking to the media live out at Arrowhead. We'll get back to Arrowhead to hear from quarterback Patrick Mahomes here momentarily. Gave a little bit of an injury update there at the end, Willie Gay. So no real word on what his status is going to be. Jody Fortson having surgery earlier today. So obviously out for the season after the torn Achilles that he suffered on Sunday against Washington. Tyreek Hill with that quad injury did not practice or will not practice today. Let's go back out and hear from Patrick Mahomes.
You have losses against them. Now the Titans are in that picture too. Does this game have a bigger importance and more magnitude, you know, considering the way the season's gone to this point?
I think every week's extremely important. Obviously, we haven't won those games early in the season, but you treat each week like its own thing. And the Titans are obviously a really good football team. I think everybody knows that. And we've had some history with them playing against them, and they've beat us, and we've beat them. So we know that they're going to come in and battle. And so we're excited for the challenge of getting to play them at their home stadium, playing against a really good football team.
Patrick, in the second half, for lack of better terms, you finally seem to find yourself again and what we're used to seeing. Upon your film study, what do you think maybe made the difference there?
Yeah, I mean, I think as an offensive, but especially me, just stopped hurting myself. I mean, just kind of just stayed within the reads, stayed true to the reads, and then when it broke down, got out of the pocket and try to make some plays happen. But, yeah, just pretty much just staying true to who I am and not trying to do too much and kind of relied on the other guys to make plays, and they did.
Patrick, the last time you guys were in Tennessee, obviously at the end of the game didn't go well. It was the last game you lost that year in 2019. Could you sense maybe what led to sort of the turnaround after that game?
We kind of like this year. I mean, we kind of had our backs against the wall. We kind of had to start winning games at that point, I believe. It was kind of close division race. We wanted to win the AFC West first off, and similar situation now. I mean, we're going in there knowing that it's a tight race, the whole AFC, not just the AFC West. And so we're playing the Titans are coming off a big win and have played great this season, so it'll be a great challenge for us.
Do you feel like with what you guys have been through, that backs against the wall feeling leads to your guys' best?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just – we get the best out of each other every single day at practice. You have to go in with that mindset of we have to get better and better. I mean, obviously, we want to win every single week. We want to win every single day, but you have to get better and better in order to be where you want to be at the end of the season. And we're going to play another great football team early in the schedule, so I'm excited for the guys to see what we've become as the season's gone on.
You saw that, right?
I didn't see it, no, but I figured it'd be there.
You did. You called it. Hey, you saw Tyron get upset there toward the end of the first half in Washington. Have you come across many guys with his brand of passion?
No. I mean, it's special, but that's what makes him so great. I mean, I think he said it after the game, but, I mean, I love that. I mean, it really brings the best out of everybody to see that passion. I think you saw that with Tyreek in the second half for us. I mean, he came in and you have that energy. It's infectious on the whole team. And we know Tyron loves football. He's not mad because he's blaming someone. He's mad because he wants everyone to be great, and I think that gets the best out of everybody.
I mean, has he kind of let loose like that before?
I would say a little in similar ways. He loves his game. He loves being a part of this team. He knows how to get the best out of every single person on his team, offense and defensively. I'm excited. When you see that Tyron, usually good things happen for us.
So you like seeing that when he?
Yeah, obviously a time and a place for it. But I mean, when you see that the energy that he has. I mean, he's trying to get the best out of everybody. He holds himself as much accountable as anyone else. And so if he feels like he's up to par, he's going to step his game up. And he's going to expect everybody else to do the same. That's why he's one of the best leaders I've ever been around, because he expects that every single play.
Why do you feel like you guys have been the best in the league so far on third down? What do you think has sort of been the difference maker in you guys converting at such a high level?
Yeah, I think it's just executing the game plan. I think the coaches do a great job of kind of telling us what to expect on third downs. And I think guys, at the end of the day, guys get open. Guys get open. I threw a couple short passes the other day, like with Jarrett McKinnon, and he freaking breaks five tackles to get a first down. Guys get vertical. They know where the sticks are. And I think having good first and second down as well and keeping us in those third and short situations helps out that a lot as well.
Does it get sometimes physically or even mentally draining, knowing since, I guess, the AFC Championship game that you all lost, that you've been the team to beat, so to speak, in the SUS, where you know that each and every week that you're going to get your team's best and you all have to make sure that you're up for the challenge each and every week?
I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way. You want to be the guys that everybody's going for, because you're going to get the best shot from everybody, and that's going to make you great in the end. And so I think the guys understand that. We know that we're going to get a great game every single week, and we have to come prepared to battle every single week, and that makes us better in the end.
When you saw the game, because I know you're a fan of football, Monday night, obviously last time you all faced off against the Titans, Henry rushed for 180 yards, two touchdowns. Monday night, 143, three touchdowns. What type of challenge do you think he presents for this defense?
Yeah, I think he presents a challenge for everybody. I mean, he's one of the best running backs, to me, of all time. I mean, the way he's able to run the football to get 20, 30, whatever, 40 carries it is, and he comes back the next week and he seems like he's just as fresh as the week before. He's a special talent who works his tail off to be who he is, and so we understand it's going to be a great challenge for any defense to stop him, but we're going to try to do the best we can at limit him as much as possible.
Patrick, in the film room of the interception that you drew, do you watch that player? Do you already know that, hey, I already know what went wrong on this play?
Yeah, I mean, all you can pretty much do is laugh about it. I mean, there's nothing, there's no excuse you're going to make. There's no rhyme or reason of why it happened. You just kind of have to just move on to the next play. And I think that's what I do on the football field as well, is just you can't go back and dwell on it. I mean, it happened. It'll be shown for a long time, but you kind of have to just kind of move on to the next play. And at least I'll be able to say we won the football game after that.
Did you actually watch that play in the film? Does that actually come up? Oh,
yeah. I watched it. Everybody started laughing. I mean, that's pretty much all you could, including myself.
To that point, I know it's kind of similar to the Baltimore thing. I know I asked you after the game. I think it was third down, and this was third down when you threw the interception. Do you think sometimes it's better just take the sack versus, or at least try to take the sack versus throwing the football and having the interception that take place?
Yeah, especially in that situation. I mean, end of the half, all we were saying before the drive was to get points. I mean, obviously we want to score touchdowns, but we need to get points. We could have tied the football game. We have one of the best kickers in the league. He would have easily been in range. So just being smart and knowing that, taking the points and not trying to press, get the touchdown, and then move on to the next half.
With everything that has gone on this season, when you do rewatch the film, or maybe even notice it on Sunday, but for a guy that's been a veteran like Mike Grimmers to come in, and just what did you see in the game, and what made him sort of effective when you rewatched everything?
Yeah, I mean, you see he battles. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, is he's played a lot of different spots for us, but for other teams as well, and been in a lot of big games. So he knows what it takes. He knows how to get in there and battle, help bring those young guys along as well, and be kind of a leader on that side of the line for us. So, I mean, it's definitely a guy that I'm glad we have on our team, and that we have that depth that he can just step right in and play really good football.
Patrick, you had the third down on Sunday where you hit Trav with the shovel pass when you were going one way and hit him the other way. I know you guys practice the scramble drills, but how do you explain that chemistry that you guys have, or he knows that he needs to be ready for that?
Yeah, I think he knows he just to get to the open space, and I think that's what he was doing there. They actually were kind of running a little double coverage type thing on top, over the top of him, so he stopped and then broke back out and broke back in. And I was running to the left, and I didn't think I could get had enough time to get my arm all the way around, so I just put it out there. And usually when it's in his area, he brings it in, and he got it and got a big first down for us.
Patrick, Andy described the feeling at halftime the other day as maybe as sort of a enough is enough feeling. Was that something you felt? And if so, how did that look in the room, and how did it take form?
Yeah, I mean, I think you felt that just from the locker room. There was nothing really said. I mean, it was really just, hey, we gotta play. I mean, if we lost that game, we were gonna be in really bad shape, and we're still not where we want to be at right now. But we gotta just keep every single day getting better and better, and making the most out of it. And hopefully, the win loss record will kind of handle itself at the end of the season.
And with that, what reason do you have to feel like that really is a reset? I mean, do you have some hope that really kind of set things straight, or how do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you call it a reset. I think you just have to build upon it. You build on it. We're still nowhere near where we want to be at. I mean, we still have a long ways to go. It's cutting the turnovers down, executing better as an offense, and finding ways to score touchdowns. And when they're not there, take field goals. And so it's something that we have to continue to get better at, and we have a long ways to go. But it was definitely a great start to finish that half like that, and hopefully carry that momentum into this week.
Patrick, week in, week out, with all the successes you've had, it seems like your game is always placed under a microscope, right? Like, everyone and everything is always being compared to you. What is, like, your in-season coping mechanism that you use to just, like, lock everything up?
I mean, it doesn't really bother me that much. I mean, as long as you're winning football games, all that other stuff doesn't matter, good or bad. And so I just kind of have that mindset of I'm going to do my routine, stay within my routine, focus on winning football games, and after that, the rest kind of handles itself.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Patrick Mahomes. Of course, you also heard from Andy Reid here on 610 Sports Radio. How about that, though, from Mahomes when he's asked about, all right, film room, what's that like when you see that pick? You know which pick we're talking about, of course, that horrific pick. He said everybody started laughing. He said everybody in the film room started laughing.
It just shows you how little everyone cares.
Or how little they're concerned that they don't still have the best quarterback in football. That, I mean, if you want to, if you're
like if Jared
Goff
throws that pick.
Yeah, it's like
they're not laughing in the Lions film room.
No.
Everyone's just like sunk. Like,
yeah, like the rookie quarterbacks, right? Because that was a rookie quarterback type of pick. Like if it's Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, or yeah, Jared Goff, any of those type of quarterbacks. Like that's a nobody's laughing. That's like, all right, that's a teaching moment kind of thing. This is one of those where it's like, how much teaching do we really have to do? He knows he shouldn't have thrown the damn ball, and we're
there's
all
nothing
laugh
to learn from
it.
That. For like, is this guy coming? No, just don't throw pop ups. Don't.
Right. No, like if you wanted to like feel even better about the situation, like with the turnovers in a weird way, like hearing that's the reaction, and look, they know the turnovers have to be cut down. But that particular type of turnover where it's Mahomes just throwing it up in the air like a rookie quarterback, nobody's worried that that type of turnover is going to continue. Now, the fumbles, the tip passes off of a drop or whatever, that's
the forced passes, right? There have been a couple of those, sure.
But the, hey, I'm falling to the ground, I know I shouldn't have thrown that thing. Nobody suddenly thinks that Patrick Mahomes is going to do this 10 other times this season like a rookie quarterback. That's why you can laugh it off. And as Chiefs fans, you got to feel even better about the situation hearing Patrick Mahomes say that. Yeah, the coaches, the locker room, everybody in the film room, yeah, they just started laughing at how bad it was.
Well, honestly, for a second, it like humanizes you. Everybody makes mistakes normally. Patrick Mahomes makes almost none. Right? Under a normal circumstance, like if you've been sitting in a defensive film room for a few months, you'd be like, this has been brutal. I don't think anyone's having fun. I don't think anyone's watching the play where the guy gets behind you, Ricky Seals-Jones gets behind you for 20 yards and everyone's yucking it up like, wee, look how funny it is that we forgot to cover that guy. But offensively, they're so unconcerned. It's like, you fool, you threw a dumb pick and it's hilarious to us because you're just going to throw like 60 touchdowns this year and it doesn't matter.
You say wee more than any grown man I know.
I know. I'm not going to apologize for it. This is who I am.
I actually think you do. You should apologize. Thank you. It's all an apology.
Thank you. God, you were so serious for a second. Like, actually, no.
Wee.
Please say you're sorry.
Just like a little kid going down a slide on the jungle gym.
I have kids. That's why it is probably, right? My kid does not say wee much. Her current move, the older one, is to listen to music, and then she acts like she's being possessed. So she'll listen to music, and then she'll say, oh, no. what's happening to my foot? And start tapping it. She's like, it's my leg. And start moving her entire leg and then start dancing for no reason.
That's a good bit.
It's a pretty good bit. It's actually really relatively strong. Like her body's being possessed by the music.
She got that from her father. That's what Cody used to do at prom and homecoming back in the day. That's what Cody would be on the middle of the dance floor. Like, what's that? And you just start dancing.
That was my move in Orlando's.
That's right. That's what it was.
For anybody who's listening to the show yesterday.
Bring that one back.
Oh, my goodness.
Gotta bring back old jokes sometimes so that everybody's included.
You told me earlier today, though, and we were talking about the Chiefs and the Titans, that you think if the Chiefs lose to the Titans, that they're not only a wild card team, but they can't go to the Super Bowl.
Well, we know they're a wild card team. That's not a secret to anybody, is it? That if they lose the game against the Titans?
I still don't think that'd be a done deal. No, it makes it an uphill climb. But no, I do not think it's a done deal.
40% of the way through the season with tiebreakers against absolutely no one?
The Chargers just got blasted.
Yeah, they did. I certainly don't think that a loss to the Titans means the Chiefs cannot go to the Super Bowl. I firmly don't agree with that because this is a team that still, as long as Patrick Mahomes and Mahomes is healthy and Andy Reid's the head coach, they can get hot for a couple of weeks. And if you're a believer that the turnovers are going to, we were just laughing about it, right? If you believe the turnovers and those type of fluky plays aren't going to happen anymore, then no, I'm not. I don't believe that the Chiefs are incapable of going to a Super Bowl still.
It's the notion that they would then be 1-4 against the top teams in the AFC. Because when they faced the Browns, they were one of the better teams in the AFC. They're top 5 or 6 team in the AFC, even at that stage. I know they're hurt now, so it doesn't feel that way. But they were one of the top teams. That would be their only win. They would have lost to the Bills, Ravens, Chargers, and then Titans. All four of those teams lead the division. That would make them 0-4 in all of the division leaders. So all of your competition in the AFC. And the problem is not that I don't think they can beat any of those teams individually. They should have beaten the Ravens. They didn't turn it over 48 times. They probably beat the Chargers. But it's the idea that I'm then asking them to play perfect football for 3 games to beat 3 of those teams in a row. And that's where I don't think it's it. Because best case scenarios, they get what? One of the teams that's outside of this circle in the opening round of the postseason? That's best case scenario. And that includes the best case scenario that they win the division in that case. Because if they lose the division, they're playing one of those 4 teams we just talked about.
But how does that not apply to any other team you want to talk about in the AFC?
As far as their ability to win 3 consecutive games?
That, but the Chiefs don't have to play I disagree that the Chiefs would have to play perfect against those teams. They can't have 4 turnovers. Chiefs don't have to. The Chiefs are still good enough offensively where they don't have to play perfect.
Okay, but they can't screw up the way they have.
Absolutely.
And that's been, if I think they lose to the Titans, I don't think there's a way they lose to the Titans where they're like, we played a good football game. No turnovers, fellas. All fine. We lost.
I'd be surprised about that, too. I'm with you.
That would also actually, in a way, be more disconcerting.
Correct. If the Chiefs played, yes. I'm with you there.
So it's okay. So the Chiefs' best is still as good, if not better, than everybody else in the AFC, right? Let's just go through the checklist here.
Yep.
Absolutely.
The Chargers scored 6 points. 6 points. This is your biggest competition in your division. We saw the Bills losing week 1 to a hapless Steelers team. So, we can go through all these different teams. Chiefs' floor, still probably higher than a lot of their AFC competition.
Because the Chiefs' only losses this year are against good football teams.
Yeah, and
Titans are a team that really do consider very fringe in
but
this
you're
department.
More likely to lose to good teams than you are bad teams. The Chiefs have played a lot of good teams.
If they win and they're 3-2, how can you even argue? What team in the NFL would go 3-2 against that schedule? That's why this game feels like, not like from a narrative standpoint, but from a real test of where the hell you are standpoint, you're supposed to beat this team.
2-3, right?
Or 2-3, yeah. Sorry. Yes. I said 3-2, but it'd be 2-3.
They played 6 games, though.
No, but he's talking about the top contenders.
The top contenders.
They'd only have, the Chiefs wouldn't
they
have.
They would have still lost to the Ravens, the Chargers, and the Bills.
They actually would only have one win against a true contender at that
point. No, but I think the Browns count as that.
Okay, so 2-3.
When they first started the season, that was the best version of the Browns. Healthy quarterback, healthy running backs, healthy defense. They had every single thing working in their direction. They were going to be a playoff team before all the injuries. I don't think they're good. I don't think they were going to win the Super Bowl, but they were a good team. A good enough team.
The Chiefs are just in a different spot because you're right. A year ago, we would have said what you're trying to say about the Chiefs right now about, hey, Baltimore couldn't beat you if you're Baltimore and if you were in their shoes. Well, you haven't beat the Chiefs. Why should I think you can go on a run in the playoffs? Why should I think the difference is the Chiefs, I've seen them do it before with virtually the same personnel. Mahomes has been to two straight Super Bowls, to three straight AFC title games. They have at least a track record. I have faith. I've seen it done before. The reason why last year at the time, the Bills ultimately got to an AFC title game, but we didn't have faith because the Chiefs, after the Chiefs beat them, were like, well, I'm not worried about the Bills, because we had never seen them beat. We haven't seen Josh Allen do anything. That was last year.
And we didn't think the Bills can win three consecutive games.
I've seen the Bills do it. So we know the Bills can do it. We know the Chiefs can do it. Still haven't seen Baltimore can do it. The Titans 2 years ago did get to an AFC title game. Their defense is just as problematic as the Chiefs right now, by the way.
Is some of this, and correct me if I'm wrong in the way that you're describing it, some of this sounds a little bit kind of like the conversation we were all having around the teams who hadn't beaten the Chiefs at all.
Correct. So like, that's what I was saying.
None of those teams have beaten the Chiefs. The Ravens didn't beat the Chiefs. It's like, oh, prove that you can do it. And at this point, no other team in the AFC as currently constructed outside of the, with quarterback and coach, outside of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who no one takes serious in this scenario, has actually even been to a Super Bowl. None of them. None of them have even been to the game. They've never even gotten that far. Is that part of the reason that you still...
It's a big part of it. It's a big part of it. It's
hold on to that.
It's a big part of it, but ultimately it's still more about the Chiefs than the rest of the teams for me.
Sure.
Right, a lot of it, yeah, it does factor in knowing what those teams have or have not accomplished. But so much of it still is the realization for me that I believe deep down that the turnovers will not continue. And if the turnovers go away, I do think this team right now would be sitting at 4-2 or 5-1. And so, because to me, the only game where they flat out got their ass kicked was the Buffalo Bills game. All the other games, they cut out the turnovers. I still think they win those. And so that's why I believe if this team... For the next, 12-plus weeks now.
You still think they can beat the Chargers, the Bills, and I'm not willing and consecutive
It becomes
weeks.
A massive uphill battle if they lose against the Titans for the division. But I don't think that wraps up the division for
is
the
that
Chargers
just because
by any means,
this
man.
This feels especially like since you
have,
bias.
Especially since you have a head that... No, because since week 2, 3, 4, I've been way more optimistic about the Chiefs being able to fix this thing.
Sure.
Right? I mean, that's just...
Well,
that's,
defensively in particular, I think you and I have very much been on the opposite side.
Turnovers,
I thought they've fixed this entire time.
When you play the results too much... Like, at some point, the results do have to matter. But when you play them too much, you get to this point where you say... Okay, what do you want? You want the Chiefs to have won all of these games? And of course, the answer is no, you're not to win all of them, but could you win one of them?
Yeah,
but
that's
if that,
it.
But Cody, if that is it, the problem with that line of thinking is that if that is your logic, then we're saying, okay, wait a minute. So we're saying their Super Bowl chances are over because of one game? They lost one game that they should have won? And now
that. But that's the thing. Like, if you individualize the Titans game, it feels that way, but it's not one game. They've lost three. They've lost three against top AFC opponents. If they lose the Titans, it's four.
And a lot of these games, like, if you wanted to run back any of those games...
There's a way that they win them, except for the Bills.
Well, like, how many of them are you confident that in a rematch the Chiefs wouldn't be able to win? Are there any of those teams that are just unbeatable, that the Chiefs just do not have a recipe to beat?
I mean, I still think they can beat the Bills, but if you said, hey, they play the Bills 10 times in a row, how many do the Bills win? The Bills win more than their share of 5. Like,
so six?
The other two, 6 or 7. The other two teams, well, I don't think it's 9.
Yeah,
I'm just, you're asking me because it's hard. Like, in any individual game, the Chiefs can beat anyone in the league. I've said that. They can beat any team in the NFL. The point is if you're then 0-4 against all the division leading teams, do I trust you as a team to be able to win 3 consecutive playoff games against those exact same teams? It requires you to not make the mistakes you made again. And now I'm asking for 3 consecutive games that you don't screw that up. Now, some of that might be determined, like you said, they lose to the Titans and they still turn the ball over and then they solve those problems going into the postseason. Then maybe you feel a lot different about where they are, because towards the end of the season and how they're playing will still probably, to your point, be a bigger factor than what the Titans are now. Like, than what they play like versus the Titans now.
And I think
now.
Part of that...
And that's where I understand the flaw in the argument.
And part of that is, like, if we were applying this same sort of whatever you want to call it, philosophy to any other team, you may say, okay, I need to see it before I believe it. But that's the difference between the Chiefs and everybody else, is I don't need to see it. Like, the Chiefs could lose to all of the competitors in the regular season, and I will still have faith because Mahomes is the ultimate equalizer.
And they're just going to get a ring against the 3 teams that they all lost
to.
Yes,
bingo.
Lose to the
that's,
Packers,
that's,
too, and we'll just let him go, like, 4-0 in the playoffs against the teams who beat them.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that's it. I mean, that's what Mahomes I was saying about a year ago. The other teams were in a different spot just because of the track record. There's enough people still on this current Chiefs roster from a year ago, or even 2 years ago, where the track record does still matter. This isn't 10 years removed. This isn't 6 years removed in a different number one wide receiver, a different head coach. It's virtually still a very similar roster overall. And so that's where it's at. And ultimately, it's the guy we just heard talk a few minutes ago, why I still think they could win three games on the road in the playoffs if need be. It's still the fact that that second half that Mahomes had against Washington and majority still of what he's done this season, why I have faith that that's not an end of the road for the Super Bowl if they lose to the Tennessee Titans. I think it's a massive game. It's an opportunity to have a statement type of win because of what Tennessee just did to Buffalo. Also, because if you're looking at the defense and saying they play better against Washington, if some way, somehow they're able to have a decent performance against Tennessee, you believe it a little bit more because, as we said, the skill players for Tennessee is as good as you've seen. Not the quarterback, but A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, if he plays, and yeah. Derrick Henry is about as good as it gets.
No, that is as good as it gets.
That's
I mean,
why.
The Bills would be the only argument. But the difference between their running back and Derrick Henry feels significant. Much more significant than the difference between Stephon Diggs and A.J. Brown when both healthy, right? Feels like there's a bit of a gap.
Yes, Zach Moss
two.
And Devin Singletary. Not quite Derrick Henry. That is true. I think anybody's going to be arguing that whatsoever. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll get back into the Chiefs defense a little bit. And thinking of optimism, where can this defense go? And is it a select group of players, specifically three or four, that actually have to get it done? But MLB playoffs are going on. I'll admit, I've watched probably fewer MLB playoff games this year than I have in the last two or three years.
It's been a great
I know, but I've watched
playoffs.
I've watched fewer, and I don't know if just there has been more primetime games that have actually been good in the NFL. So like Monday night, where it's normally maybe a crappy Monday night game, you're like, oh, I'll watch the MLB playoffs. Haven't done it.
Geno Smith last Monday instead?
I did, or whatever night that was, Sunday Night Football. Yeah. I watched the final two innings of the game last night that saw the Astros ruin a bet of mine with a bunch of runs late. I watched enough of that. But
you had the under for that?
I had under 7.5 on a live
you
bet.
You did not get close.
Well,
it was
yeah.
You were pretty good there for a minute.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I was
pretty good there
I
for
was
a minute.
Feeling good heading in.
I have a very simple question I want to ask everybody. This is not just open to the two of you, but to the text line as well. 913-576-7610. If you watched that game last night, you know that the umpiring was bad. The home plate umpire missed 23 balls and strike calls. 20?
Yeah, but out of how many?
Three!
How many pitches were thrown last night?
Like 300.
Okay, that's still a
That's way too many.
No, it's not. It's a solid success rate.
Hold on.
No.
Let me get to the question.
No,
Including, by the way, including a curveball that would have been a strike that would have ended the inning before all those runs got scored gold and cost you money. Just give me one good argument for why there shouldn't be a computerized strike zone. Just give me one.
Computerized strike zone's the dumbest idea I've ever heard.
Robot umps, if it makes you feel better because it sounds cooler. But computerized strike zone should just
start now. Because
there's
a lot of problems
now.
That come with it.
Like what? Being right?
No. Who are we going to bitch at if there's a robot?
Well, there's that. There's that. Where would
everybody,
the complaining be?
I don't know. We always find something.
But there's also, you would have the umpires who also have you would just have a complete mess on here. You would have current umpires that wanting to go on strike. You would have stuff like that occurring. And I ultimately,
they can still
Nick,
stand behind home and call them safe or out.
Nick,
I don't,
Nick
by
ultimately.
Way, don't care what the umpires think about any of this.
Yeah,
they're bad at their job. That's why you're getting fired.
You say, hold
and
on.
Nick, if you're bad at your job, you get fired. That's how this job works.
Hold on real quick. You say the umpires, you don't care what they think. I mean, it sounds in theory, but there is something that they have, which is an umpires union. You can go computerized, but you still need umpires.
I just
you
let
still,
them stand behind home. I don't care.
You would still need some. There would be
the
a massive fight.
It's
not as simple as that.
I do care what they think.
But also, Nick, I'm more about getting the call right
I don't care about that.
I want the call right.
Why don't you want the call right?
If the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl or the Royals are in the World Series, and you're okay with because of the you'd be entertained by it, so you're okay if it costs the Royals a win in the World Series.
Let's cross that bridge when we get to it. The Royals aren't good right now, so I don't care about.
I mean, they have been to two World Series in the last decade, so which is more than most.
What
franchises.
Have you done for me lately? Here's what I'm saying is that I think the human element is good. It adds for fun conversation.
Think it's interesting. It's entertaining.
It's very entertaining, and I also think this 23 out of 300 some pitches, that's bad all of a sudden. So
yes.
So what success rate do they need to operate at? 98%. That's when you're satisfied. How about you do 90? How about you do a good job 98% of the time? And every time you go over that 2% of bad, then I'm going to let you know about it. And I'm going to say, you know what? They should replace Cody with a robot host.
What's that percentage, by
How's
the way?
How's that sound?
What's
you
that?
Like that idea, Cody?
First,
what's that percentage? Because they're
the robot's not going to do nearly as good of a job as me. We got Watson in here cracking jokes.
So that's what you think. You think your joke hit rate's at 98% right now?
Nope.
I got news for you, bud.
Nope,
I got news.
It is very much not. You and actually, I had a conversation with a former big leaguer about this, and he agreed with you. He said that it takes the interest out of the game because you like the moment of anticipation of will they call it a ball or strike, or when the guy turns to yell at the guy, or like you enjoy those moments. That's so wrong.
No, it's not.
You know,
Witt's
original idea was just to put a buzzer on the umpire that buzzes every time he's getting it wrong. Not to correct a call, but that he'd slowly learn, like...
Like a shot caller for a dog?
It's like you keep consistently calling the outside pitches. Like, it keeps buzzing. Maybe stop calling the outside pitch because it's not a strike.
One of the independent baseball leagues, I can't remember which one. One of them, they had essentially, they still had a real ump behind home plate, but there was also...
Yeah, see, they can have that.
A computerized, looks like almost like a little... solar panel that's above the press box, and it helps judge the strike zone, and that was a way they kept the real ump, but if there was any they were able to confirm it just to test like how different was the strike zone compared to what he was saying. I mean, that this is something that's been tested 94% of the time. Nick, you're wondering like how bad is that percentage? 94% is the average success rate of accurate strike calls in baseball. That I don't do the math on that. I'm not, that was not 94%
last
night.
Okay, he had an off night. So now we got to fire the guy. He had one bad night. We got to fire
him. He can keep his job. I'm just giving him a robot to make his job easier.
Okay.
If I could give you a robot to press the buttons, but you can still talk on the mic.
No, actually, no, he can't. You want to fire him. You want to fire this good man. You want to tear down a good man. Men an honest living. So let's just take this a step further. Let's put computer chips in all the footballs and in their shoulder pads, too. So anytime a quarterback gets hit, the second after the ball leaves his hand, automatically the robot referee will then throw the flag for roughing the passer. How's that sound, too? We'll just start opening Pandora's box.
Also, just so you know, they already do data track players in the shoulder pad. Like, that's not new
information. Okay, head coach. Let's fire all the head coaches, too. And they can just make decisions based off algorithms.
The Cowboys, I think, would be Super Bowl favorites if they had a robot head coach right now.
Imagine the day that you, as a radio host, are going to call for the firing of the robot head coach because he made one call that didn't end up working out. And you're sitting here, and you've got other robot head coaches trying to undermine.
I mean, by this time, I have a robot boss. Laz, I mean, we're all just in the same boat.
Laz Diaz and Angel Hernandez are two of the worst umps in baseball, plain and simple. They just are.
You guys want to take jobs from humans and give them to robots. You guys are what's wrong with this
country.
No,
I want the robots to help.
You guys are what's driving this country
into
the ground right now. I want more jobs for humans. Human.
Can I ask you one question?
Human race.
Can I ask you one question real quick? And then we're way late for a break. Do you ever use self-checkout at the grocery store?
Every time.
Okay. Coming up next, the hope for the defense comes down to three players in particular.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.